brother.
Oh,
what's up?
This is a good big party, man.
Yeah, brother,
I can dig it.
Stop right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Sam. How you doing?
I'm good, Earl. How are you?
I'm doing great at Cool Off.
Yeah, thank goodness. That humidity is not my favorite thing.
Yeah, well, you've been clamoring and crying for the warm weather.
I know. You can't please me.
Yeah, well, I don't know about all those things, but I do know the guy on the other end of the line. He knows. You can talk to him about anything, you know. You can ask him if there's life on Mars, and I bet you he'll be able to tell you that, yeah, there
is. That's how full of it he is.
Hey, good morning, Sandy. How you doing, my friend?
I'm pretty good. I'm full of it.
It is. It's an unusual time for you and I. It's what, Wednesday, and you and I are together.
Well, you know, we missed Monday. I don't want to have go into withdrawal.
Friday. It's been a long, long, lonesome.
Oh, that's right. We missed Friday too. We had this. The station went black.
And you know, Sandy, man, so much has been going on since you and I last had a chance to sit down and chat. But I want to begin, Sandy, with the economy and just where we really are. And I was reading or talking about President Biden and his plan to deal with inflation. And he talked about as I talked about it on yesterday, him saying, well, the Federal Reserve, not all of us, but many of us are aware that the Federal Reserve is going to be the leader in bringing inflation under control, and that I've learned from you over the years that the number one tool for doing that will be, raising the interest rates. And so the short side of that is the backside of that, or backstory to raising the interest rates is recession. Sandy, so we haven't talked for a while. Where are we, man? Where are we headed? Off the cliff?
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't think there's been a time when the information, the news bag for business news has been fuller. You know, there's just so much simultaneously going on in the economy now. We've got the shortages that are created by the pandemic, and the dislocation of jobs. So we're short on staff. The pandemic, that staff shortage created lots of shortages in the supply chain. We have the shortages created by the Ukrainian war and the food shortages and gasoline and oil and natural gas shortages. So that all of those shortages have the potential to drive prices up very rapidly, because commodity prices don't just move, they move quickly. And we can see that now. We saw it at the gas pumps. And we have problems associated with interest rates needing to go up to adjust for the inflation that all of this is causing. Plus, in fact, we increased buying power. You can see that the infrastructure bill was quite effective at creating jobs. All you have to do is drive on a road in Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
And find out that every potential road construction site is under construction at the same time, which tells you that there's every potential construction worker in Wisconsin who could potentially be working on a road is employed right now. And I would guess that lots of these projects will be delayed somewhat because they won't be able to get enough workers to actually do all the road construction, because that's happening in every other kind of form of construction now. So all of these things are conflating in the economy right now, as well as we have a stock market that was soaring at a very high height with investors ever since 2000 and 2020, basically worrying about when the recession was going to come. So we've had a constant growth curve going on, but it's been fragile for a whole bunch of years in terms of people worrying when the shoe would fall. So now we have all these conditions in which the shoe is likely to fall. We've had a great deal of wealth that's been created by the policy of low interest rates and the accident and the policies that created these low interest rates. And those low interest rates have created a great deal of asset value. So people who own stock got very rich. People who have houses that inflated in value a great deal. But the salaries didn't go up as quickly as all of the other wealth that was accumulated. And now that salaries are beginning to go up, the economists are beginning to worry about what they call a wage price spiral. And they're worrying that these rising wages will cause inflation. Well, rising wages are the way Tom, Dick, and Mary accumulate wealth. It's not with assets. So it's interesting. When assets were appreciating like mad, no one was talking about suppressing that because of the effect that rising asset values would have other than making the rich quite a bit richer. But when wages start going up, we have to start worrying about inflation and a wage price spiral. So life is the economic life isn't the socioeconomic world isn't very fair to Tom, Dick, and Mary.
You know, Sandy, when we're talking about the hourly wage going up, it disappears when all of the other things around it.
Yeah.
It's not like people were looking at a $2 an hour increase in what they were making.
Here's the problem. Inflation is primarily driven by the purchase of things, okay? Right. And it's not driven by the purchase of stocks or assets or the things that wealthy people do with their money. It's basically driven by the things that Tom, Dick, and Mary do with their money. So if we have enough money to bid up the price of avocados, the price of avocados can go up. If we have the money in our pocket to pay for rising prices in gasoline, the price of gasoline goes up. So economists, with their surgical minds, they aren't worried about society that much, realize that when wages go up, there's enough money in people's pockets to bid prices up so it can sustain inflation. So all of the policies to beat inflation are designed to take money out of the pocket of Tom, Dick, and Mary. It's when you raise interest rates, you make it harder for Tom, Dick, and Mary to borrow money to buy a house or to buy a car or to buy a dishwasher or an appliance or to borrow money through their credit card to consume, 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 to consume.
We just ran into a Sandy. Okay. All right. So we ran into a little snafu with Sandy. He'll be back. And, you know, Sam, all of the things that Sandy is talking about, and you know, the average person, you and I, we don't have that cash expenditure or access to cash through the wealth of the stock market that people have made. And so, as Sandy talked about, you know, people spending, people aren't spending cash they have, they're spending credit. You know, it's on the plastic that we are dealing with. You know, so I think so. Sandy's back, right? Okay. Well, so it's people buying on credit, and so the more you buy on credit, you know, the more difficult things become. So I guess Sandy's back.
Welcome back, Sandy.
All right, Sandy.
Sorry.
That's okay. Okay. But let me ask you, because before you went to Never Neverland, you were talking about you know, the average person and people looking at the average person spending. But now we're at a point, Sandy, where the average person isn't spending cash that they have. It's now credit. And
well, I mean, that's the deal. The economic policies to kill inflation are designed to take either the money that people could borrow out of their pocket to buy things like credit card debt or mortgage debt or installment debt. All of those things are not things that are helping the wealthy buy assets. It's all stuff that helped Tom, Dick, and Mary purchase the things that are needed in life. And it's the bidding up of the prices of those things that drive inflation. That's the things that are measured in the market basket that is the consumer price index.
You know, Sandy, Tom, Dick, and Mary, at some point in time, that credit, those cards are going to have to be paid. And you know, it's one thing to have the credit, but it's another one when you get to a point of living off of it and you find yourself in a quandary, right?
Yes, but I mean, the wage. So I was started this with the issue that economists are now talking about, and conservatives are talking about, the worry about the wage price spiral, meaning that wages are going up. We have to worry because now they're going to bid up prices and create inflation. Well, wages have been suppressed for a very long time, and it's interesting and ironic that now when wages start going up, we start talking about implementing government policies to suppress that. You know, it's the wages of Tom, Dick, and Mary.
Hey, Sandy, hold that thought. Got to go to a break. Sandy Williams is on. We'll come to the phone lines after the break. Stay on the lines. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789 in Texas. At that same number, my good friend Sandy Williams is on, and I'm very happy that he is. Let's go to the phone lines and Dave from Mequon. Hey, Dave, how you doing?
Good morning, Earl. Good morning, Sandy. Really quickly, in regards with the wages that Sandy's talking about, unfortunately, even though wages have definitely gone up, they're being offset with the inflation in everything as far as fuel prices, food prices, clothing, everything. And so the net result is actually people are making almost 4% less even with the wage increase. And we have, you know, I'm sure Sandy's familiar with this, you know, we have stagflation going on right now as we speak. And that's the worst of all worlds. So basically what's happening is inflation is increasing at such a great rate where essentially where consumer goods and everything else is outstripping the amount of money that people are actually making. The one thing I will say out of this whole dilemma that is going to change rather rapidly, and I've been reading about this, is that manufacturing now has exponentially, since the beginning of this year, have gone to robotics, and robotics will be one of the ways to lower costs going forward because for the lack of workers, you know, people are retired, baby boomers are not working as much, but some of them are coming back to the workforce. But at the end of the day, with the inflation that we have currently, we're making it worse by limiting our supply of access to natural gas, oil, and what have you. And the reason why I say that is, if you look, when the president just said, you know, we're not going to do anything in the Gulf of Mexico anymore. We're going to stop drilling there. We're going to stop doing any type of drilling in Alaska. People forget that oil is just a lot more than just transportation. It's used with fertilizer.
So, Dave, is it safe to say that? A lot of what is taking place now in this economy is directed at Democrats and Joe Biden and his policies. Is that what you're trying to say?
What I'm saying is it's a whole combination of different things. Obviously, the war does not help. It does not help the fact that the China was closed down, Shanghai was closed down for a couple months again. And so you do have manipulation of that going on. But the bigger point is that we are, you know, as far as energy independence is concerned, we have right now, just remember this, the amount of, like the nuclear reactors are going offline, the one in Michigan. Wait, let me finish my point.
Hey, Dave,
quick,
I know I got Sandy on the other end, man. You know,
That's all right. Go ahead, Dave.
All right, so if you look in California and Michigan, they just lost their nuclear reactors. They requested an extension on them, and they're being mothballed. And consequently, what's happened is when you take that much power out of the grid, you're going to have to replace it with something. And that something, the price of lithium has gone up 75% because batteries are the future of electric vehicles and batteries for solar panels and wind farms, and the problem is there's a finite of material. That's even less than what have natural gas. So when you look for cobalt, nickel, and some of the other special minerals, there is a very limited amount of that stuff that's floating around. And if you're going to think that you're going to add a billion cars, there's a billion combustion cars, and you're going to switch that over to electric, it's never going to happen without severe consequences to the general public as far as the cost of a car and transportation and everything else. That's a bigger picture.
All right, Dave, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you want to respond?
Well, it was a whole market basket full of sort of facts, some of them related, some of them unrelated to one another. But, you know, to sort of unbundle it one at a time, the problem we have is that government policies, as we try to control the economy, tend to favor those with assets, as I was saying before, so that when we reduced interest rates to try and drive the economy up, what we did is we drove up the ability to, we made it much more possible for people to borrow large sums of money for the purpose of doing business. And it also, low interest rates drove up the value of assets like stocks because the future value of a dollar went way up when the interest rate goes down. And so when we end up with inflation, which is the ultimate result of a hot economy, the way we drive inflation down is to take money out of the pocket of wage earners to try and burden them so that they can't bid up the price of everything on the market that is measured by the CPI. And so it's not a fair process. And I'm not sure how we design one that is fair, but it is true that Tom, Dick, and Mary bear the brunt of economic policy, and they don't realize the value of it. When we went to full employment, we didn't start driving the wages up until near the end of that boom period. And even now, the wages are being driven up because of the shortage of workers, because of probably a great deal of it is the result of the change in societal habits during the pandemic. People unwilling to go back to their jobs because they rethought whether they were willing to work for that kind of a wage to do that kind of labor. But that's on the one hand. On the other hand, David wanted to talk about electric cars, I guess, and electricity and natural gas and oil. And there we have a mixed bag. You know, we talk about nuclear plants, and nuclear plants are plants that have to operate all the time, and they become less valuable as we've increased the amount of solar and wind, because what we need is plants that you can turn off and on to react to the issue of whether there is wind or sun available to produce electricity at any given time, and nuclear plants can't get turned off and on. So the value of nuclear plants has actually gone down. I think what Dave did prove is that economic policy is very complicated, and I think the thing that has me that's sort of awakened to it in the last 5 years is a realization that economists have to work hard, I think, on designing some new economic policies that don't place such a social burden on Tom, Dick, and Mary.
You know, Sandy, on yesterday, my wife went to look for a vehicle. I talked to you about it, and got to the dealer, and they don't have any.
Right.
This is to me is amazing, but it's the reality of what we are talking about and just how deep the supply side situation is going to be. I know I was reading about the Chevy Blazer and how many of those vehicles are set to roll off, but they don't have what they need in as far as the, excuse me, the components are concerned. And there's a 9-month backlog. I mean, all of these things, Sandy, when you put them all together, the price of renting houses have gone through the roof, and the average person, I mean, this is going to be a horrific, painful time. 2008 seems like a lifetime ago, but I don't know, Sandy. This is all the things that you see. You know, this could be as bad as 2008.
Well, 2008 was a nightmare because it involved the near collapse of the financial system. But it was very clear what the problem was, and it was quite a finite.
Sandy, hold the thought. We got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
We only got one world. That's all we got. One world. And something's wrong with it. Something's wrong with it. Something's wrong with the good world. Yeah. We only got one world. That's all we got. One world.
If you picture a watch. Yeah, a self-winding watch. What happened there is that the winder in the watch was broken, and we had to figure out how to wind that, get the watch so it could wind itself again. And if we have a recession this time, it's going to be because the watch is broken. You know, the gears, because there's so many pieces that are in a fragile condition right now. We've got shortages like you've described, cars that can't get built. Just about anything that needs to be built that has computers chips in it, or that has various kinds of metal products in it that are produced in, you know, other countries, or that are produced in our country but are short of workers. We just have a confluence of so many broken parts or breaking parts in the economy that to fix the economy this time involves a great deal more complication. Last time it was, let's get the interest rates low, let's kind of stoke the economy with money coming in the top. But if we stoke this economy with money, what we'll end up doing is driving up prices because everything is short in supply.
You know, Sandy, what the impact then, because it's global, right? I mean, this is not just what's happening in the United States. If you listen to conservatives, they lead you to believe that the only place this is happening is in this country. But this is a global problem, and so what is the impact of that going to have? I mean, even if we were able to come out of it and the rest of the globe still remains in it, I mean, that's going to retard us coming out of it, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, it's a global problem, and that's the other problem with this particular. Last time, in 2008, the problem was American-based, and when we sneezed, the rest of the country, the rest of the world caught a cold. This time, we're all coming down with a contagion at the same time. Europe is suffering the same sort of inflation and shortage situation we are. China's is on the verge of a recession because of the pandemic and the shutdowns there and the resulting problems there. Those two economies, the European economy and the Chinese economy, are the things that help support the U.S. economy, because it's all interrelated. So if all three of those economies go into recession for different reasons, it gets a lot more complicated.
Yeah, but it gets a lot more complicated, but the bloodletting is going to be even more severe.
Well, that's what I mean by complicated. It's harder to fix.
Yes.
Takes a longer time.
So, Sandy, if at the time, again, and I'm saying, I'm looking at this from the perspective of, you know, the average Joe, and what they're going to have to deal with, through all of this, there is no quick fix for the gasoline prices. We're going to have to live with them for a while, right? There is no quick.
I think gasoline prices are less worrisome to me than the shortage of parts for automobiles and the complications in the supply chain. Gasoline's a commodity, and commodities go up and down in price, and the price of oil is going to come down.
The average person is really suffering with that gasoline price, and it's not going to come down overnight, you know. And I know, you know, when I go and fill the tank up and it's $80, and then you look a few days later and it's another $80, and you know, and all of a sudden you look and you're spending the equivalent of a car note simply for gasoline. You know, people who don't have the luxury of having a couple different vehicles, but they've got one. And that becomes a real burden for a family that's struggling just to get around. I'm not saying that the gasoline price, Sandy, isn't going to at some point in time go down, but it can't go down fast enough for people who are struggling just to get back and forth to work.
Well, that is true. I mean, the American economy, for better or for worse, we built the American economy around the automobile and around gasoline beginning in 1955 when we started the whole interstate system and took out all of our intra-urban system. You know, if we had streetcars right now, it wouldn't be such a problem if you could jump on the streetcar instead of filling your car with gas.
That is correct. But you know, I guess they couldn't see everything, and I guess nobody could foresee this. But Sandy, even knowing that we're at this point, and can you blame it all on Joe Biden and Democrats?
Well, no, of course. Well, no, I mean, it's been a confluence. First of all, you have to point at the tax reduction that started this whole process. But our government, since 2008, has been trying to create a vibrant, strong economy by spending far more than was taken in revenues, and has been doing a bunch of things which in the long run everyone knew had the potential to be inflationary. And then on top of that, you know, and that was all working all right. The economy was getting hot with low interest rates, and we still didn't have inflation, but all we needed was a little bit of shortage, and that we found that. You know, we found shortage with the pandemic. We found shortage with the supply chain disruptions. We found shortage with the tariff policy that began that process. And we found shortage with the pandemic, which was obviously not a partisan process. Maybe the way we handled it might have been partisan, but it was experienced worldwide. What's happened is that the business cycle has run a course, and it's run its course all the way now to something which is predictable, which is inflation, but it's inflation on steroids because of the shortages.
You know, Sandy, that sounds frightening to me when you add all those other components that you are talking about, and that the business has run, this thing has run its cycle. So what replaces it, Sandy, and that replacement of what that was, how long does it take before that reaches the average person?
Well, I guess to some extent, the problem is that the average person, the worker, the cogs in this process, are the ones that experience the business cycle, and they don't experience the upside anywhere near as much as they experience the downside.
Right,
And so it's going to happen again. You know, it's really unfortunate. And other economies, the European economies that have set up safety nets, have made it much less perilous to experience the business cycle. If your family has health care, and if your family has child daycare, and if you have education paid for, and if you have a retraining arrangement that's that comes to you and retrains you very aggressively, you're in a far better place than you are in our country when things get hard and it's each person to themselves.
You know, Sandy, it is a harrowing thought. But again, if you've been around a while, you remember, you know, harsh and hard times. But it's, you know, for some it'll be a new thing, but it's what our country is. It's what happens, and it's what the world is, all interconnected. And maybe the interconnectedness of it, Sandy, is what, you know, makes it so harrowing, because the interconnectedness of it means that everybody's going to be suffering.
Well, like I say, though, I think if our economy was better, if we had a socioeconomic system that was more balanced and it was more aimed at protecting Tom, Dick, and Mary, we can look to Europe to see the examples of it, I think this might actually ignite a fire under the political process to start paying attention to the people.
To valuing the people, you know.
I mean, because the people are the ones who bear the brunt of the business cycle, and it maybe has taken me a long time and instead of just looking at it with interest as an economist, if you look at it sociologically speaking, it is the workers and Tom, Dick, and Mary, the middle class, that suffer the slings and arrows of the business cycle. The wealthy might lose an appreciable portion of their wealth, but they don't suffer in a human sense.
You know, Sandy, I want to move to yesterday. I had a guest on who represented the Gun Owners of America, and so I had him on, and he came on and did a horrific job of representing the Gun Owners of America as we talked about the horrific situation that happened in Texas. And Sandy, what are your thoughts about the fact that an 18-year-old could walk into a gun shop and buy, and I know that it's legal, and buy a weapon of war? And as you see people pushing back on the term weapon of war, they don't like you saying that it's a weapon of war. Tucker Carlson had a fit about it the other day, saying, well, it's not a weapon of war, but whatever, that young man could go in and buy it and then buy 1,000 rounds of ammunition and then go back the next day and buy another one. Is you know, I know it's legal, Sandy, but does that make sense?
No. And in fact, a country having 400 plus million guns and having 20 million assault rifles out there in the public hands. First of all, you know, millions of assault rifles in the public hands, that's a bigger arsenal held by private individuals than our army has. I can assure you that the inventory of our army wouldn't include 20 million assault rifles. We never have more than 2 million in our standing army at once. So, it's our country jumped off the tracks when we got all these guns and made them available, when we have public figures like Tucker Carlson, who can stand up and responsibly, he thinks, say that an AR-15 that can shoot, you know, 1,000 rounds of ammunition in a short period of time is not a weapon of war. What is it a weapon for? What possible good? And there are some who are now pointing out that they believe the Second Amendment is there so people can withstand their government with guns.
Yes.
So it's like constitutionally supported sedition.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. Sandy Williams is on the line, 844-967-2789. We'll come back to this on the other side. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Be right back. All right, Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. On the line, my good friend Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, listen to this. 50 caliber machine guns. For those who don't know, you know, I remember going to a gun show and looking at the sheer size of a 50 caliber machine gun, Sandy, was on a tripod. It was brand new. They sell for $75,000. You can purchase them, you know, in this country. They're legal. The guns can fire about 1,200 rounds a minute and take down an airplane. In Texas, there's 28,690 50 caliber machine guns owned by citizens. Sandy, is that what the founding fathers meant by the Second Amendment rights?
Well, I for one believe that the militia, the standing militia, was the important part of the Second Amendment. And I don't know when it is exactly that our Supreme Court, sometime in the middle of the last century, lost its focus on the plain meaning of language and decided that that this right of to bear arms was essentially a right held by every individual in the country, and it's been carried to this crazy, crazy extreme. But the only justification you can come to about it is the notion that people have the right to carry arms that would allow them to protect themselves against the military, against the government.
Yes.
So, what?
Yes.
I mean, what is this all about? Yeah.
I mean, that's really at the root of it, Sandy. And this guy, this character I was talking to yesterday, and many like him, clearly believe that they're going to be able to defend themselves against what they call a tyrannical government. But if for anybody who's foolish enough to think that they're going to overthrow this government because they have access to these weapons, you know, the government is not going to allow the citizenry. You know, we've seen it, you know, Waco and other places, Sandy. They're not going to allow, you know, people who somehow think that they're going to be more powerful and to take over this government. It's not going to happen.
Well, and the picture of what it is that would go on, I mean, didn't Waco, Texas show us?
Yes.
The craziness? Yeah, I mean, that was and the standoff that was up in Oregon. And I mean, the situations where we've gotten a glimpse of what they're talking about leads you to understand that it's craziness.
You know, Sandy, and yet it's a lot of money. So when you look at the amount of money that is being made in the selling of these weapons and ammunition and all of those things, but it finally appears as if, you know, something, if not something major, is going to occur this time around, Sandy. The Republicans are finally starting to realize that, you know, we're risking, you know, elections for this insanity. You know, it certainly makes no sense, some of the laws that are in place, Sandy, or where, you know, I can, again, buy a gun and have to go through the background checks and all of those things, the gun show loophole. They call it the gun show loophole. So, it just by saying loophole, that tells you there's something in error there. But you can legally sell this gun to somebody else without doing background checks. That just makes no sense whatsoever, Sandy.
Well, and you know, the fact that we have 400 million guns in the country already tells you that you know, it's the genie's out of the bottle, and probably, and we you know, we can try to make it harder going forward, and as we get more sophisticated weapons, hopefully they won't be available for purchase. But this country has gotten itself to a crazy place. There's people worship guns more avidly and more devotedly than they worship whatever religion they've decided to adopt.
That is well said, Sandy. You know, you travel the world. You don't see people walking around with their chest poked out with their AR-15s. I mean, what is the purpose of that? Well, I'm going to be protecting myself and my neighbors. And this conversation I had with the guy on yesterday, he claims that the police are happy to see them with these weapons. I happen to know better. You happen to know better. The police aren't relying on citizens with weapons to bag them up.
Well, in fact, the police are terrified by the fact that there are 400 million weapons out
yes.
there. And so that they're in the hands of almost any potential perpetrator of any crime that they run into. Interestingly, when the NRA had their convention, they banned the presence of weapons
yes.
in the arena where they were meeting.
Which is...
So I guess they understand the danger of weapons in the hands of people in a crowded place.
You know, Sandy, and you are a gun owner, and so everybody, they're gun owners who know that there are things that don't make sense out here.
Yeah, I have shotguns. I don't have pistols, but and shotguns are pretty much for hunting, right?
Right.
So they're for a purpose. But the notion that people would, and people that carry handguns, there was a couple of days ago, there was big mention in the news about how a woman had used her gun to defend someone in a crime. And the reason it was big news is because it almost never happens. Almost never happens. All these guns out there and this notion that they're going to be used to keep people safe, and yet, when it happens someplace in the country, it becomes national news because it's a very, very rare occurrence.
You know, Sandy, the other part of all of this is that people somehow have become comfortable in thinking that when they become John Wayne, that there aren't some laws and some legal issues that they're going to have to deal with by discharging their weapons. I mean, it's not a free and easy ride, is it?
No. And, you know, some states have tried to stand your ground and trying to put into law, because, you know, the general common law principle is that you have to be in fear of your life in order to use deadly force. And so then the question is, how do you get in fear of your life? And you certainly aren't in fear of your life when someone is running away from you and you shoot them in the back. However, circumstances have occurred such that now, stand your ground has become sort of an ambiguous term, and it allows force to be used in situations which might in fact not involve fear for life. And the same is true for the home is your castle. That was sort of part of common law.
Yeah, the castle doctrine.
You have a castle doctrine, which allows firearms to be used in circumstance of trespass in the home. And, they're trying to establish more clear principles. But quite frankly, the law of human nature, the natural law is that you don't use deadly force unless you're in real fear of your life. And carrying a gun and shooting someone at a range of 10 or 15 or 20 feet, someone who isn't armed, is clearly going to be a problem for the person using the gun.
You know, Sandy, that's the other part of it. Again, people don't know. I've read some things about people who did that, and they didn't realize the financial difficulties and legal difficulties that they're going to incur. It's not a seamless situation, and people should be made aware of that before they get involved in that. Got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. Sandy Williams is on the line. You too can join us, 844-967-2789. We'll be back.